So, hey everybody, this is Chase in Arizona together with Nick. We're returning for the first college basketball podcast we've done here at the USChoops.com college basketball podcast in quite a while. We're recording on Monday night on October 27th, but I don't think many people listen to this until Tuesday the 28th of October. College football's in midseason right now, full swing. All the old coaches are being all highly paid coaches are being fired. The college basketball season is about to get underway. There's been a really big slew of exhibition games. That which seems to just grow and grow every year. So anyway, a lot going on. And by the w World Series today too. So anyway, Nick, how are you doing?
I'm great, Chase. Good to have basketball back here. Been a really interesting football season. But yeah, basketball's coming. It's going to be in full force. They'll have a lot of great non-conference matchups, and we're going to break down USC's exhibitions here.
Yeah. And, my apologies to everybody for not podcasting for a while. I've been going through some family medical stuff. Hopefully we'll have good results. We've been having some good results so far, but that's kind of taken me away from the podcast booth. I was invited to a really cool event involving the basketball team, which I was not able to attend because of these kind of other concerns. So I missed out on that, but hoping to catch up with things. Tomorrow there is a media availability for Coach Musselman, so I've been invited to that. Maybe I could ask a question or two, and we're hoping to get Coach Lee on the podcast here soon. So anyway, lots going on basketball wise, but two interesting exhibitions amongst the many exhibitions for USC in basketball with this kind of totally new team. The first was right down the street from where I grew up in Loyola Marymount, literally like a quarter of a mile. We used to play there growing up before they securitized the campus. Kind of an interesting little environment that Stan Johnson is. And Stan Johnson's the coach there, right? The head coach.
That's right.
And he has he. I was watching the game, and I don't know if Lorenzo Romar is actually still on the staff or is on the staff there. I guess he was at Pepperdine, so he's moved over. After he got fired there, he's now at the staff at LMU, which is I didn't know if you knew that, but I only knew from
No.
watching the broadcast of the game. They have an interesting team. Loyola Marymount does. They are. I mean, it's not like they have all these like great players, but they certainly don't look like they're like the bottom of the West Coast Conference. I think they'll be competitive for them, like a middle tier West Coast Conference teams. And they have Jalen Shelley on their team from USC from last season. He kind of is a good kind of representation of what their team looks like. It's a pretty long team. I was kind of surprised to see like the length that they had. It actually caused us, I think, quite a bit of an issue around the rim in that game. Both Ezra Azar and Jacob Kofi really struggled to score in that game against LMU, which was interesting. I mean, I think Ezra was at 2 points on just both free throws and missed both field goal attempts. Kofi had 1 point. He was between the two of them, they were 0 for 5. So the link that LMU had there between Jalen Shelley and which is the main guy that their big guy who's not. Rick Isana, not much of an offensive player, but definitely effective to kind of disrupt things down low. It clearly affected our guys, Aaron McBride as well. He's kind of a stronger guy, so that really affected our guys on the offensive end. But we started this game out pulling ahead to this gigantic lead because like LMU just could not score on us at all. I think they were. I want it was like some crazy start to the game where they were like 1 for 20, or it might have even been worse. I'm not even sure. Eventually, though, they kind of got their stuff together and they pulled to get closer, and then we pulled away to start in the second half. Very similar story both games, by the way. Same thing happened in GC, which we'll talk about for a second. So the big story of that LMU game, and it's also a big story of the GCU game, which we'll talk about. Was Gabe Dines. He in that game he played 29 minutes, which was a lot more than I think a lot of us expected him to play. When he went out of the game, we struggled. He was plus 15 when he was in the game. The USC team was plus 15 when he was in the game. He scored 9 points, had 8 rebounds, had a steal, 3 assists, and 6 blocks. Now, they say 6 blocks. It could have easily been 10. I mean, he was really disrupting a lot of shots, getting his hands on a lot of balls, especially against LMU. That really, really affected them. So, Nick, I don't know if you had were able to catch any of that game, had any thoughts from it, but the big takeaway, and this is the kind of big takeaway from both games, was offensive end a little bit chaotic, not really, settling in. We looked, I think, more stable in offense in the second game, but that LMU game, particularly, very chaotic offense, but the defense was just kind of like really stifling.
Right, Chase. I didn't actually see the LMU game, but did see the box score, and obviously the defensive field goal percentage was just phenomenal in that game. And we've talked about Gabe Dines before, and just how tremendous his defensive metrics were at Youngstown State, and how his ability to protect the rim just changed the game. But there's some question about whether it translates to this level. And these were mid-major teams, but especially in the case of GCU, it's a top 100 KenPom team right there, and playing them on the road, and Dines looked phenomenal. So, just judging by the box score in that LMU game, it seems like the defense was pretty locked in. And obviously, it's early season, and you don't want to make too much of it, and you don't want to make too much of our offense, which was pedestrian either. Because teams are still trying to, figure out their pieces and learn how to gel and play together. But definitely a good start defensively. I'm curious, Chase, did Jan Vyd play in that LMU game?
He
Is
did.
the
He was
okay.
actually, not only did he play, he was probably their best offensive player. He was the guy that was, I shouldn't, Rodney Brown was their best offensive player. So I, just to be, he was the best, but Vyd was like able to kind of score a little bit in the half court on his, create his own shot. He did that a couple times driving in. He kind of took advantage of Jordan Marsh guarding him. And that's something we've seen in both games. Marsh in this game was pretty effective in general. He's really quick out there, and you could see him being really disruptive on defense. The issue was, if you can kind of like not, if you could control the ball, not get the ball stolen, you could take advantage of his size, especially if you're able to kind of post him up, bring him down closer to the rim. And Vyd was able to do that a couple times with Marsh. Overall, I mean, it was that in that game was interesting. What we've seen in both games is like Chad Baker-Mazzara has kind of been like the alpha on offense, especially like, basically
Yep.
trying to take the Desmond Claude role. And something we hadn't mentioned yet, Rodney Rice has not played in either of these games, and he's supposed to be our top half court offensive performer. So he hasn't played in either of these games. So that's going to be important. Obviously, we don't have Elijah Arenas, but he's we're not going to have him. If at all, until like mid-January at the earliest. So like we kind of have to not think about him. So in this game against LMU, Mazzara was like the number one alpha, but like right behind him was Jordan Marsh. I mean, Marsh took 13 shots. He got to the free throw line a few times, scored 12 points. He actually, I think, fouled out of the game. I'm not sure if they did the 5 or 6 fouls, but he had a lot of fouls. He had 0 assists, though. He had 0 assists in this game. But he did have 2 steals. I mean, he played well overall. He was plus 6 overall when he was on the court, played 32 minutes. But yeah, like Vyd was able to kind of, when he, what if he didn't turn the ball over, he was able to have some sort of effectiveness in the half court. Now, I should say he did have 3 turnovers. We in for the game, LMU had 21 turnovers. I mean, the defensive performance here was very strong. LMU only shot 28% from the field and turn the ball over 21 times. The only reason they kind of, it was even close at all was the offensive rebound. They had 15 offensive rebounds, something that were in a factor in both games. Both games have similar stats along these lines. So, but yeah, getting back to it, Vyd had some effectiveness. The top guy for LMU was probably Rodney Brown. He's the one who is. He had been at Cal for a year. He's from Rancho Christian, and we were, I think, Andy Enfield had even looked at recruiting him, if I remember correctly. But he ended up at Cal. I think he had a pretty decent game against us that year at Cal. If memory serves, I think he hit a couple shots, and then he transferred, and he went off to Virginia Tech. Still kind of, I mean, he was playing like 15 minutes a game, but didn't really get starters minutes. And now I think he's found his home at LMU. I think he'll score probably 15 points a game, is my guess for LMU this upcoming season. I think this is like the right spot for him in the West Coast Conference.
Yeah, I think that's right. Should we move on to GCU?
Yeah, let's move on. Oh, let me just get a couple other just so to cover just kind of performances of other guys, just people who didn't see the game. EJ Neal didn't play a ton when he was in there. It looked okay. Ryan Cornish got in for like a minute, did something that really upset Buss and got immediately yanked. Yeah, I talked about Kofi and Azar not really being effective too much in this game. Marion Dickerson did play quite a bit. He was not really efficient from the field. He missed most of his shot. A lot of layups he just kind of rimmed out. He went 4 for 4 from the free throw line, which is interesting for him. But even though he didn't actually register any steals, he was super disruptive, very disruptive, and kind of just contributed to this kind of like LMU really kind of playing only like a razor's edge the entire game. I mentioned Gabe Dimes, but he just completely dominated the game. Baker Mazzara, very similar kind of like story as far for both games. His offense was not efficient at all, but he is really just his length really, really matters. And you see that he had two steals and a block, and just in general is kind of getting it in everything, getting his arms everywhere. Jaden Brunell did not play very much against LMU. He came in for just a short, he had 1-3 and was out of the, I guess he played 9 minutes, but here's the bizarre thing. He played 9 minutes, hit 1 for 2 from three, and was plus 12, but only got the 9 minutes. So that's, I mean, something I think we have to keep an eye on. Finally, Jerry Easter. We'll talk much more about him in the GCU game, but his performance, even though he was only 2 from 8 from the field, he played in a way that inspired Musk to start him against GCU, which really surprised me. So let's transition over there. By the way, Jerry Easter against LMU, 3 steals, 3 blocks. Not bad. 3 blocks. Okay, so we get to this GCU game. So for general background, and maybe Nick, I'll let you just kind of discuss in general what's happened with Grand Canyon program and basketball, and what they're about.
What city in Arizona are they in? Are they in
Oh,
Phoenix,
they're in
Chase?
Phoenix. They're
They're in Phoenix.
literally It's literally like 6 miles down the road from where I live, right down Camelback.
Wow. Okay. So they're a I believe they're a Christian school, GCU, and pretty known nationally. I mean, I've seen them in a lot of like advertisements and stuff. So obviously, like building their brand and their cachet as a school. They were in, I think it was the West Coast Conference
They
last
were in
year,
the wet. They're in the
or
WAC.
the WAC. Okay, the WAC. So they were in the WAC. Bryce Drew's their coach, who was in the mix to, potentially replace Andy Enfield at USC. He was one of the coaches mentioned in the in that search before Musk got the job. But he's done a pretty good job there. Former coach at Vanderbilt, Coach Darius Garland and Simi Shitu there. Obviously had a tough year when Darius got hurt and got fired at Vandy after 3 years. And before that, he was at Valparaiso and went to the tournament with Valparaiso. And he's the son of Homer Drew and the brother of Scott Drew, who's the Baylor coach. So obviously, good pedigree. He's been at GCU for 6 years, and this is year seven. Pretty consistent winner. Year one went 17-7, then 23-8, 24-12, 30-5 in 2024, made the tournament, and then 26-8 this past season. And they actually finished the year 52 in KenPom in 2024, and 101 in KenPom in 2025. Really, really quality program. I think I heard on the broadcast they've only lost one home game the last 2 years.
Yeah, 32-1, I believe, is the record.
Yeah, which is pretty wild. And I think that home game was to South Carolina. Just looking at KenPom here, it was an early season game in 2024. And they have it. They've labeled it semi-home, not even home. So they might be
I think they lost last season to Irvine at home.
okay. Yep. UC Davis looks like UC
Oh,
Davis got
Davis.
him.
Yeah, Davis.
Got him in the non-con. Okay, so they lost that semi-home game, but their only true home loss is that UC Davis loss this past year. So, very good home record. Their crowd is phenomenal. Their students do a terrific job. They treat this exhibition game like it's the Super Bowl and sell out every game there. So they have a tremendous amount of fan support and buy-in, both from the students and the local community. So, really cool program, and also a really good opportunity for our players to actually play in a hostile atmosphere. And, I think of guys like Jerry Easter, a young 18-year-old kid, and probably hasn't played in a place like that in his life, right? So really cool to see him get the reps and see this new team kind of gel. And I thought it was great that the game was somewhat close in the last couple of minutes, because you actually had serious game pressure in this, kind of meaningless game, right?
Yeah.
So really cool for our kids to have to kind of come together, gel, and execute under pressure in the game. So I guess, Chase, I teed it up there. I have
Yeah.
thoughts on the game, but let's get your thoughts first. Did I miss anything? And then kind
No,
of just get your overall thoughts.
I think you hit everything. By the way, for the Nick is the young here. So I remember Bryce Drew from the famous shot that he hit for Valparaiso on the NCAA tournament. So that's something everybody look up. It's a buzzer, one of the most famous buzzer beaters from the 90s in the NCAA tournament. GCU is it's funny. Like, I basically live where I live is like on the corner of Camelback Road and Scottsdale Road in Scottsdale. If you go 11 miles right down Camelback to the west, it's you hit GCU. If you go about 6 miles due south on down Scottsdale Road, you hit ASU. So that's right where that's like it's I'm very close to both schools. It's kind of funny, just by randomly. Both of them have played decent basketball in recent years, but those are kind of like the two big. I mean, I think they're more popular than the Suns, even when Durant was here. I mean, you hear people talk about GCU quite a bit more. It's just a really fun environment. Musselman said in another podcast today, the Peristyle guys, that he had been looking for an environment that where there would be a really tough kind of road environment where you get a lot of crowd support in favor of the home team without having to travel that far. And he said that he thought the two best environments on the West Coast were at Arizona, which I completely agree with, and at GCU, which is interesting. I'm sure that a third one would be up in Spokane, but I don't think we wanted to make a trip up to Spokane for an exhibition game to play Gonzaga. So I think,
Yeah, I'll also note too on that podcast, and again, recommend everybody listen to that. It was really good,
yes, for
really good
sure.
job by the Peristyle guys there. He mentioned it was like as hard or harder than playing at Purdue, which I thought
Yes.
was that was super interesting, right? Because like Purdue's got that great, amazing crowd up there.
Yeah. Well, that's, and then he was asked that at the post-game press conference. They said it's just as hard as Purdue. And he says, well, it's Purdue's not harder. You can't, he's basically, his point was, you can't get better than this. This is, yeah, maybe Purdue has more people, but not a density basis. This is dense and loud and as you're going to get at Purdue. Now, Purdue's just going to be a bigger arena, but it's still those smaller arenas can actually be sometimes more intimidating. And you see that sometimes. So that was really cool that we were able to go into that environment. I think the story then for me is probably Jerry Easter. He gets to start at point guard, and description of the game, same scenario. We come out, the other team is just not really ready. I don't think they were ready to see a defense like ours. We really disrupted this. We pull out to this big lead. Then they get their sea legs. They come back. They actually took a small lead. It tied at halftime, or one team led by two or something. And then in the second half, once again, we pulled ahead and then kind of maintained a steady lead of about anywhere from 6 to 10 points. At some point, they got it down to the 2 points in crunch time, but we were able to hit a couple of key shots, including Chad Baker-Mazzara driving to the basket and hitting kind of an alley-oop tip-in for Marion Dickerson. So that's kind of the general broad story of the game. But really, to me, I look at this game and Jerry Easter starting a point guard and really kind of led the team. What were your kind of big takeaways from the game there?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that the poise that Jerry showed was impressive. Like he didn't ever look sped up, which, a lot of freshmen get sped up really easily. And he's not really a natural point guard either. So he's kind of growing into the position, but he's 6'3", but has long arms. He's like 6'7", has a 6'7" wingspan. So kind of more of like that combo guard, but I thought he distributed and made good reads and did a really good job for his first start. And you mentioned the steals and the blocks that he had against LMU, and he had 11 boards against GCU. So super rare you get a lead guard competing on the glass like he did. So I was really impressed with the way he competed on both ends, but then also just his poise and not getting sped up. And yeah, beyond that, I think our length and athleticism was a big problem for them. Didn't miss too many rotations. Gave Dusty Stromer a few looks from three here and there, and he hit a couple of them. But I thought overall, like our defense just it's a different caliber of defensive athlete this year, I think, than last year's team is the kind of the big thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like these two teams are comparing last year's team, and they're just like total opposites in almost every conceivable way. We even saw from like last year, when we really couldn't get things going really well in offense, we still had kind of like skilled enough offensive players that we could always kind of get like a pretty good kind of conventional shot at the basket. This year it's like a lot more crazy, like chaotic. Like we have these like athletes running around. You're not necessarily gonna get like more these kind of conventional shots. It's kind of like, we're gonna be playing by I feel like this team is just gonna they're gonna be really entertaining to watch, I think, just because like the games are just gonna be kind of crazy. But last year, if you remember early in the season last year, I mean, this was a huge thing. I know we played Gonzaga really tough in the exhibition, but once we started the regular season, we could not guard opposing like point guards. Like those little guards were just chewing us up, killing us early in the season last year. And we haven't seen anything close to that this year. And in fact, this game was basically put away at the end when Jerry ripped the ball from Grand Canyon's guard bringing the ball up. And who was that?
I think it was Henley.
Was it Henley? Or
Yeah.
was it Henley? Okay, that he ripped the ball from. Yeah, and Henley had been their top player against Baylor. So Henley's the one who was at UNLV, and actually we took a pretty hard look at it, right? So
We were talking offline about how good his game was in UNLV. Like he had a really good year for
yeah,
UNLV.
and he, I mean, he's a legit guy. Like he against so this you had mentioned that Bryce Drew, his brother is with Scott Drew, the coach at Baylor. So there was a game a week ago prior to this where the two of them played. Now there was no, it's interesting, there was no film on this game. Like it wasn't televised at all, which is bizarre. But Grand Canyon went to Waco to play Baylor. And I think Baylor won by only 4 or 5 points. I mean, it was a pretty competitive game. If you look at halftime, it was very, very close as well. So in that game, Henley, I think I looked, I'll double check in a second. I think he scored like 16 points against Baylor. Pretty impressive just overall performance there. And yeah, here I'll bring it up the final stats right now in that game. So let's see. I'm sorry for the dead air here as we do this, but yeah, so no, wrong game popped up. Anyway, I'll find it in a second. But yeah, it was interesting that GCU was able to land him. I mean, I think that's a pretty big pull because he was leaving UNLV in a situation where schools wanted him.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, even when he committed to GCU in the first place, I was kind of like, what? Because I figured he'd end up in the SEC or the Big Ten because he did start his career at Minnesota as well. So, like, he has the Big Ten pedigree. But, knowing that fan support of that GCU has, not shocked that they have some NIL to, go after guys in the portal. And I'm sure Henley, took up a sizable portion of that budget.
So Henley scored 28 points against Baylor.
There you go. Right.
Yeah. At Baylor in Waco. So, and that game was a game. It was, I can't tell you everything about the game as far as the progression and stuff like that, but the final score was 5 points. It was a 5-point win for Baylor at home. So, that GCU seems like a pretty, they've got some decent guys. They have Nana Owusu-Anane, and he's the guy from Baylor, not Baylor, from Brown, who put up, who was pretty well recruited himself. They have Dennis Evans, if everyone remembers the he was, I
Yeah,
think, a 5-star at one point.
he was. Yeah,
And we ended up going to Louisville, right? Was that right? And
that's right.
of course, at the time, I was like, what's going on with this rating? Because it made zero sense. But and he just got, he was in there for a minute, and Gabe Dines just like destroyed him. And then they have our good friend Wilhelm Breidenbach from modern day, who's been apparently he only goes to
Oh.
schools that play USC, between
Yeah.
Washington, Nebraska.
Very well traveled. Compton Magic kid, actually, way back in the day.
That's right.
And then
So,
of course, Dusty Stromer. How can you
and
forget
then,
Dusty Stromer, right? The
right,
one and
yep,
only.
yep, yep. And then they, so, and they have this, this one, Turkish player thing, F.A. Demiriel, who they have really, were really, really high on. But, he fell down pretty quickly in this game. And that's kind of one of the things there that's interesting is our four bigs are kind of an interesting, group, and we'll have to see how they develop over the course of the season. Must discuss how far ahead of schedule Gabe Dines is. I mean, he's looked really great against GCU. His minutes were, he didn't play a lot in the first, this was what was strange. Must didn't play him very much in the first half, but in the second half he relied on him heavily. So he played 23 minutes. He was +9 for the game. But again, 13 points, 7 rebounds, 2 blocks, a steal. Only one turnover. I mean, before, three fouls, performed really well. So he's kind of just been a really big anchor. He's kind of been the story of the team so far, probably.
And
And he's,
banking in threes too.
yes, banking a key three, a key moments, critical threes. Then you have like Azar, who's kind of, he's been, hit and miss, although he was 4 for 4 in this game. He did have 3 turnovers, and that's something we got to keep an eye on. 2 for 5 from the free throw line. Kofi started off the game great, 2 dunks, and then kind of like disappeared after that. Wasn't really able to hit. And then the other big is Brunell, and this is the game Brunell played. He actually got about 10 minutes, but he had three. He really took advantage of those minutes. He had 3 threes in 10 minutes, +3 from the field. Now, he struggled a little bit on defense. Like, he got blown by a couple times, and that's something we gotta you also get keep an eye on. So those four bigs are an interesting kind of group to see how Must uses those minutes. But, we're able to really get GCU in foul trouble in this game.
Yeah, we were. And I think that big rotation is going to be really interesting to track moving forward. Must even mention that, and that Dimes and emergence, he's developed ahead of schedule, is kind of what he said. And they're going to have to play him, right? And that's going to have to lead to reduced minutes for the other guys. And then the question is, like, can you play Kofi at the four? And I think you can. I mean, he's got some skill. He's athletic. So maybe they try that. But then if you play Kofi at the four, that's going to take away minutes from Brownell, and maybe Dickerson and Terrence Williams, where everybody moves down a spot. So I think that big man rotation is getting pretty crowded pretty quickly. Now Terrence Williams did get the bulk of the minutes. At that position, I think he played 35 minutes or so. I can pull up the box
Yeah,
here.
he pulled out. He played 36. Yeah, he
He
played
played,
36.
yeah, and he was pretty ineffective. I mean, he went 1 for 5 in the fields, 0 for 2 from three, and had 1 rebound in those minutes. But he did lead the team in plus minus, Chase. He had a 13 plus minus on the
Well,
game, so.
I will give him credit for this. I watched him very closely. His defense has improved immensely from last season when he was one of the worst defensive players, not only in the on the team, but probably in the Big Ten. And really, because we were asking him to do things I don't think he was able to do last season. Looks like he's dropped a little weight. He played much, much, much better defense yesterday. His offense, though, I mean, look, he's been out with an injury where he couldn't use his right arm. So it's not like
Right.
he could practice his shooting while he was out injured. And it looks like it because he was completely ineffective on offense. I mean, he was able to like drive to the basket one time, get a layup where Dines essentially screened out the big man for so there was no contest at the rim. But yeah, Williams had opportunities for like pretty much wide open threes and other wide open shots and just could not knock them down. And then otherwise didn't really take advantage of it. I mean, the story of the half court offense was really just give the ball to Chad Beckham-Bazarre and see what he could do with it. And
Yeah.
for the most part, it wasn't good.
Yeah. He's gonna have like games where he looks great and still have games like this where he doesn't look so great. But I think ideally, like when Rodney Rice comes back, maybe a little less the defense isn't quite as slanted at Chad and he gets maybe a few cleaner looks. You're right about Terrence Williams. There was that one possession that was that stood out to me defensively where they gave the ball to that Owusu guy on the baseline, and Owusu's like you said, I think he was a 17 and 10 guy at Brown, and was barely coveted in the portal. Like he had some big names, and there was NIL involved in that recruitment. I know SMU was involved at one point, but he tried this like spin move on Terrence, and Terrence just like packed the crap out of him. Like it was kind of like a men versus boys possession. And I remember thinking like, wow, okay, Terrence wouldn't have done that last year. And he does look a little bit more agile. But on that note with the forwards too, you hit on a Marion Dickerson a little bit defensively, and he was defensive player of the year in his league last year. He just, even if it doesn't show up in a steal or block, he's just very active defensively. And it reminds me a little bit of De'Anthony Melton. He's obviously a different player, much bigger and much older, but he gets a lot of deflections and you just kind of notice him flying around a lot and being impactful, generally speaking.
Yeah, I mean that's very true, and it's going to be hard to keep him off the court. Even when, I mean, look, he actually got, he kind of went for a steal late in the game against GCU. I can't remember exactly who he was guarding, but it may have been Owusu, but it probably was Henley. And he went for a steal, and the player was able to get by him and dunk the ball because there was no help. Everyone else had kind of cleared the lane. But on the flip side of that, like for every play like that, there's like six plays where Dickerson is impacting half court, the other team's offense by getting in passing lanes, making life difficult, just putting guys under pressure. And I mean, so I looked, we held GCU to 0.84 points per possession. I know this is a stat we've talked about before in the podcast, but it's hard for people to gauge what exactly that means. Generally speaking, college basketball teams average 1 point per possession. That's a good rule of thumb. GCU last season only had one game where they averaged as low as 0.84 points per possession. And that was when they went into the NCAA tournament game against Maryland. So that was the only game, and Maryland actually did a better job even on defense than we did. But the GCU wasn't playing at home, so for them to play at home and only average 0.84 points per possession, that's a pretty impressive number. Now, granted, it's early in the season; guys are not hitting shots, but for the most part, I think GCU hit their open shots. There was just a lot of contested shots.
Right. And that was a really good Maryland team. Obviously, Derek Queen, Jacoby Gillespie, Julian Reese, Rodney Rice. Like that was a really stacked Maryland team. So, not too shocked. They put the clamps down there. But yeah, I mean, just really impressed overall with the defensive performance. I think if you have minutes where you stack Dickerson and Dines together, that's just going to be a really hard lineup to score on in general. Really
And
tough to get
that's
stuff
and
around
that's
the
how
rim.
we yeah and that's how Musk closed down the game. He played and plus he played you have Chad Beckham-Bazarre out there, who's also long
Yeah.
as could be. And then the other two were Jerry and Terrence Williams, which I'm assuming as the season goes on that Terrence Williams minutes will have been like Rodney Rice minutes. I think those were like the minutes that Terrence Williams seemed to be taking yesterday, or not yesterday, but on Saturday.
Yeah, or Brownell, if Brownell gets an increased role. Like it's the kind of thing that's probably going to work itself out. And you know, if Terrence steps up to the challenge and seizes those minutes, great. Yeah, all the better for the team.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, that's like the story of these two exhibition games. We start the season next week. And gosh, I don't even know who. I have to even take a look to see who we started with. I know this is not like we're not exactly playing in the murderer's row to start the season here. We probably saw some of the more, well, you never know, but it's, some pretty competitive games for us. So we start with Cal Poly next Monday, a week from today. Cal Poly was not too hot last season. I think they were what, 16 and 19. And they come to Galen, and then on what, 2 days later, or when we play, and then I know the following Sunday we play Manhattan College, which is a pretty strange game. I'm not sure why Manhattan College is traveling to Los Angeles, but they are, and we play them at home. So not exactly the two toughest games to start the season. After that, on Friday, November 14th, which is the day before the Iowa football game, there's a double header at the new arena. I think it's the new arena where the Clippers are playing, right? We're right next to SoFi. And UCLA is going to play Arizona that day, but in the first game, USC plays Illinois State. So that actually is going to be a fun event for people who can go. I don't know if I can go because of this family situation. Yeah, the Intuit dome, right on, right on Century Boulevard there. So those are some interesting games going forward. I mean, what are you looking for? What are you going to be looking for in this Cal Poly game, Nick?
Just seeing if Rodney comes back, I think first of all, I think Must said it's going to be a game time decision, but he's had the shoulder thing bothering him. So, we'd love to see him out there. But, if not, just the rotations, I think, because, the rotations in this GCU game surprised me. I'm surprised Jerry played as much as he did, and he definitely stepped up to the challenge, which was great. So, wonder if we're going to see that again, or if that changes at all. I think just the big man rotation, like does Gabe Dines seize that center spot, and become the guy there at center. I think I'll be looking for that. And just kind of seeing continued progression of the offense, because it was definitely clunky in the GCU game, but it's great that they're getting reps, and it is kind of nice to play a few kind of lower. I don't want to say cupcake because you want to take every game seriously, but easier teams early on when you have a team built through the portal like this, so you can continue to gel and kind of understand your rotations and how the pieces fit together.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. I'm not, I would not be a huge fan, having watched us play now again, especially at GCU, and I'm not a huge fan of like throwing these guys into the to the wolves, because on offense I don't think we're quite ready yet. And I'm not even sure this team is. I think this team has somewhat of a ceiling on offense. I mean, maybe Brunell breaks through, and he can sustain on defense, and or Kofi, something breaks through. But one thing you don't see is like, you don't get the sense like, oh, if we just move the ball enough, some guy's going to get open and hit a shot. It's more like guys really seem to like someone's going to need to make a play on offense for us to score. That's kind of what it seems like. However, we might get some easy baskets from the defense generating shots. I can't expect that kind of performance from Jerry going forward every game now. Maybe he'll get to the point this season where he can play at that level consistently, but he's still a freshman. And I wouldn't expect that much. Dines is going to be really key. I mean, if Dines can actually play the entire season the way he's played these first two games, our defense is going to be really tough. I mean, this is that simple. I've talked about this on the Discord channel, by the way. People who go on the Discord channel if you haven't already, for look up USChoops.com on Discord, join the Discord. If you're not sure, you can tweet me and I'll send, or DM me and I'll send you a link to it. But there's a lot of great conversation there. But one of the issues that Dines had last season at Youngstown State was teams would put him into kind of these pick and roll situations where the big man, you know, that he was guarding would go and do a ball screen on the point guard. There'd be a switch, and you know, Dines kind of get lost somewhere, you know, lost the court. He has really improved on that. He's really, teams have not been able to isolate him on those pick and rolls. I mean, this was something you saw with like late in Shaq's career when he got started to get a little heavy, and teams would just basically, you know, try to get Shaq in these pick and ones because he was a little bit slow-footed by then. That seems to seem so far that the Dines has made some progress on that. And the other thing is just whether, to the extent he, you know, guys can just push him around, he does look stronger. I'd just say he does. The way he's played these two games, you know, look like a marked difference from last season. And you know, just by the numbers, he scored 13 against GCU, mainly on dunks. I guess he did hit that three, bank. I don't know if that should count. And he had nine against LMU. But you know, he's hitting the shot. He's hitting shots that he's taking. And you know, last year for Youngstown State, like, you know, he was not a major offensive scorer for them. I mean, he played like you know, about 17 minutes a game, and he'd come in and he'd do his defensive stuff. But you know, he was, I think, for the season, I'm like looking here, his biggest, he had 19 points once, you know, but and 23 points against like a Division II team. But you know, he was not a major scorer. So if he can kind of keep this up, I think the team that's gonna bode really well for the team.
Yeah, totally agree. And players get better, you know. Like, and he's the kind of guy where he has the body, right? He's just huge, and he's so hard to move. And you know, you will have to scheme around him a little bit, but his feet aren't bad. Like, you can play him and drop coverage, and he can, you know, flash his hands and you know, and get big and be disruptive. Yeah, it's the other thing with our team. We're going to be really hard to post up, I think. And you saw that with when Terrence was isolated on Owusu. Gabe Dines is going to be really hard to score over. So, if you shut down the rim and you make the other team beat you by hitting threes, we have the length to contest threes. And it's kind of the formula that Andy had with Evan Mobley, where and Big O, where they could just shut down the rim and have that elite 2-point defense. I think we're going to have a very good 2-point defense this year. And we do have some length on the perimeter to, you know, really be disruptive on these on 3-point attempts too. So yeah, pretty bullish on the defense overall. But yeah, I mean, there will be times this year, even with Rodney Rice back, where I think the offense will struggle in the half court. So we're really going to have to be opportunistic in turning our defense into offense, because in transition, we have the athleticism to, you know, really get out in transition. And I think the team lacked that last year to a degree. Like, last year's offense was more of a half court offense with Ogbo and Desmond Claude and those
And St.
pieces.
Thomas, yeah.
St. Thomas, exactly. Like, those guys had, you know, they were skills, but you didn't have the dynamic kind of, you know, twitchy athlete that you have with this team.
Yep. All right. Any last thoughts before we get out of here?
I'll just say, like, one global note on college basketball: the freshman class looks amazing in these scrimmages.
Yeah.
Darren Peterson at Kansas was unbelievable the other night. You know, considered USC pretty heavily. Cam Boozer at Duke looks amazing. So you got, and then DeBansa, it's BYU beat North Carolina by a couple points in Utah in a really good scrimmage. So you've had some scrimmages. Arkansas's freshmen look good too. They blew out somebody the other night.
They're
So
playing
yeah.
right now in Memphis. So I don't know if you have
Oh,
seen.
interesting.
Yeah, they're heading down to the final media timeout. They're up 10 though in Memphis.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're yeah, they look good. I mean, yeah, a
Yeah.
lot of these freshmen look really tough.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got Darius Acuff and Malik Thomas out at Arkansas. Cal does the one and done thing, and I don't think he had a great game in his first game, but Mikel Brown at Louisville has been pretty impressive in some of the the offseason stuff. So
Yeah.
I guess if you're an NBA team, you're going to want to get into this draft because definitely have a lot of future stars here, it seems like.
Yeah, this is the, I mean, this is going to be the interesting question for that Elijah is going to have to be really taking a sober look at, because I mean, it's this is quite the class. I mean, I don't remember, it's been a while since I remember there being this many high impact freshmen, that are surfacing this early. Now, maybe, these guys will regress a little bit, but I mean, did you even mention Cam Boozer? Maybe you did. I mean, like,
Yeah, he's something.
he's been nuts. And then, Nate Amet for Tennessee has looked great. He hasn't always scored great, but he's looked great. And Caleb Wilson looked great for North
Yeah.
Carolina in that game.
Yep.
Even guys like Koa Peete and Braden Burries have looked good. I mean, Koa
Yeah.
Peete looks really, really effective. So, this is like a pretty impressive group of guys, all in one class.
It is. And I think, if you want to look at the bright side, if you're a USC fan, Elijah played in the McDonald's game with these guys and had some good moments. And, certainly he's going to be one of, like he's going to be behind. He's going to have to get back into shape. But if he does, come back this year, that could be like an impactful piece that that you pick up later in the year that these other teams won't have. So, yeah, like, and again, he's younger and you have that caveat too, but that's another chess piece potentially that this team could have that other teams won't.
Yep. Well, there's so many more things to talk about college basketball. We didn't even touch on the G League guys coming back to try to play college basketball. So there's plenty to talk about. We'll try to catch up with that on future podcasts. But until next time, thanks, Nick, for staying up late. I know we're late for both of us, and fight on, everybody.
Yep, fight on.